Good afternoon, college football fans. Another Saturday is upon us. Welcome back to the College Countdown here at the National Football Post. I am your host, Joe Fortenbaugh, joined as always by a good friend and director of college scouting here at the NFP, Wes Bunning. Wes, what's going on, my man?
Oh, just taking in another glorious day of college football, getting ready for the dual nightcap. We got Texas, Oklahoma State, and USC, Oregon. So hoping I get USC, Oregon here in Pennsylvania, but I doubt it.
It is the last day in October, Halloween. Tomorrow, we move to an NFL Sunday. We move to November. We're starting to really come down the stretch here. The BCS rankings have been released. We've got two big games, as you spoke about, on the docket tonight. First, let's start with the big one in the Big 12. Number three in the BCS, Texas Longhorns, taking on the number 14 in the BCS. And that's what we refer to around here as. We only go with what matters. The Oklahoma State Cowboys. Now, Wes, there's a lot going on in this game, and one of the big features that people are talking about is that if Texas gets through this, the rest of the schedule is a relative cakewalk, with the exception of possibly Texas A&M at the end of the year. This could be the game that determines whether or not they play for the national title, and I think one of the big things to consider is quarterback Colt McCoy. Everyone's been talking about him. He's still in consideration for the Heisman, hasn't looked outstanding this year, but what is Oklahoma State going to need to do to slow down McCoy in an attempt to win this game?
Well, they're going to have to take a page out of their arch rivals, the Oklahoma Sooners, defensive playbook. When we saw Colt McCoy struggle against Oklahoma, and then we saw him torch Missouri last week, the biggest difference in those two games was simply pressure. And now, not pressure off the edge, but pressure right up the gut. And what Oklahoma State doesn't have that Oklahoma did have was Gerald McCoy inside, being able to consistently beat the guard in the center off the ball and shoot through the A-gap. So you're going to see a lot of blitzing from the linebacking core. Andre Sexton, Patrick Levine, the two linebackers, expect to see them line up right near the line of scrimmage consistently, shoot those A-gaps, and force Colt McCoy to get rid of the ball before he wants to, because we've seen he hasn't been that decisive in the pocket. He likes to make up his mind before the snap of the football. So if they can disrupt that timing in the pass game, I think they can slow down the Texas offense just enough to keep pace.
I totally agree with you on McCoy. He has not looked that sharp as of late. Last week, yeah, I'll give him that with all the points they rolled up. But 2 weeks ago against Oklahoma, I was out on the West Coast, so that game came on at 9. And, of course, if I'm going to watch Texas-Oklahoma, I'm going to go to a bar to watch it. So, you know, I find the San Diego's a bunch of transplants, so all the bars have some sort of affiliation with some college or some pro team. I found the Texas bar in town. Place was packed at 8 a.m. to get ready for this thing. And you know, I sat there and I watched it, and not impressive, Wes. I mean, you remember 2 weeks ago, we never got a chance to recap it, but McCoy, like you said, looked indecisive. What else did you take away from that game?
Yeah, it seems consistently that he makes up his mind before the snap. He's not comfortable going through a second, third reads. So there he has a tendency to look at his first read, stare him down until he uncovers. And, you know, as any quarterback knows, the defense tend to shift when he's staring down his target. We saw him throw a big interception versus Oklahoma, consistently trying to force feed Jordan Shipley down the field. And Texas simply doesn't have the receivers to consistently beat press, get into the routes, and give McCoy the decent targets to hit. So if they're able to get physical with the Texas corners and limit, force McCoy to get the ball out of his hands quicker, I think they could struggle.
Now, it's interesting you mentioned Jordan Shipley, because that was where I was going to head to next. The wide receiver from Texas, one of quarterback Colt McCoy's best friends. Oklahoma did a nice job limiting him in that game 2 weeks ago. Obviously, he's one of the best weapons McCoy has at his disposal on offense. What is Okie State going to have to do to try to limit Shipley like Oklahoma did in an effort to keep this offense from rolling right through him?
Well, what we saw Oklahoma do was roll out their big 6'1", 295-pound corner, Brian Jackson, and press Shipley off the line. And Shipley struggles within his initial burst off the snap. He's not real quick, and he struggles to get into his routes against bigger, more physical corners. Oklahoma State has a corner in Parrish Cox, 6'1", 198, even a better athlete than Brian Jackson, who I expect to follow Shipley all around the field, use his long arms, bump Shipley off the line, and take him out of his routes early. Because if you can reroute him, he's slower into his routes. That takes off the timing him and McCoy has. And we saw him. He was held to only 4 catches against Oklahoma State when he had to beat press coverage. I think he'll be the same thing will happen this week if Cox consistently gets in his face and forces him to beat his press.
4 receptions against Oklahoma, you mean,
correct? Oklahoma. It's a tongue twister today, Joe.
Well, of course. We're talking Oklahoma, Oklahoma State. It's, you know, I have trouble keeping up with it, and I have it right in front of my face on a piece of paper right now.
So you're the only chance I have, Joe, getting through this. So.
Well, that's my job. I'm just here to ask the questions and monitor and kind of set you up so you sound good. As long as I'm not screwing up, you're not screwing up.
Exactly.
So, all right. Let's move to the other side of the football here, and let's talk a little bit about Oklahoma State's offense. We'll get to Dez Bryant in a second because clearly that's the big story. But quarterback Zach Robinson has had a pretty good year. He came in highly touted this season. Oklahoma State got a lot of hype coming into this year. A lot of people said this was going to be the year. They had the big win over Georgia early in the season. And a lot of people thought that would propel them to greatness, but it just hasn't worked out that way. What's Okie State going to need to do to keep Robinson clean so that he can do what he needs to do to get that offense in the end zone?
Well, first off, I love what Robinson's been able to do this year, Joe, without 2 of his top weapons, especially Dez Bryant in the pass game. The guy's a natural leader, does a great job, you know, being decisive in the pocket, getting the ball out of his hands, letting his playmakers make plays for him. So what needs to be happened in this one, Russell Okung, the left tackle, needs to protect his blind side. He's going against a talented front four Texas, especially off the edge. Sergio Kindle, the all-everything Big 12 pick, he gets all the attention. However, the guy I'd be most concerned about with is pass rushing phenom Eddie Jones. This guy's an undersized defensive end, a nickel rusher, comes on the field on third down, consistently can reach the edge, drop his shoulder, and flatten out around the corner. And if he's able to consistently force Robinson to step up in the pocket or feel uncomfortable, I think Okie State could have some trouble in this one. So Russell Okung is the key at left tackle, a potential first round pick, one of the best senior left tackles in the country, but he needs to protect the blind side to give Robinson a chance.
One of the big stories in recent weeks has been the season-ending suspension, of wide receiver Dez Bryant, one of the top wide receivers in the country coming into the season. He was putting up a good year, and we're not going to get into the details of the suspension and talk about that. That's not what we do here, Wes. You and I, we break down games, or I should say you break down games, and I try to keep up and pay attention. But for the most part, Bryant was their best player on offense, and with him not there, who's going to need to step up to make plays for Okie State this weekend?
Well, there's a chance that running back Kendall Hunter will come back this week, which is a huge boost to the offense. However, head coach Mike Gundy's already said he's only going to see a limited amount of carries. But stepping up for Hunter has been Keith Tutson. This guy is a big physical back who's shown the ability to not only run between the tackles, but also has 13 receptions over his last 3 games, can create out of the backfield in the open field, and I think we're going to see a lot of check down to him. If he can make a defender miss, pick up yards in the pass game, and keep the Okie State in manageable down and distance situations will be key in this one. So they've done a nice job, Zach Robinson in particular, moving the chains without Bryant. So I think Tostin is a key in this one.
Last one on this game, who you got?
I like Texas. I do. I expect just too much firepower on the defensive side of the ball. They'll be able to rush the passer too consistently. Without Dez Bryant, I mean, that's a huge chink in the armor. And we've seen what Oklahoma has been unable to do this year without their keys with Sam Bradford. I just think when you lose a guy as talented as Bryant, it's tough to score that many points and keep up with an offense as good as Texas.
All right, so Bunning's got Texas, so I advise the rest of the country to go Oklahoma State, anyone else that's listening.
Don't even pull that card, Joe. I always you need advice from me every Saturday on who to pick, so don't even go there.
You know, I do. I come to you because I like to see in the morning. I like to see who you like. I like the. I always like our morning conversations because a lot of these games, I'm going to be honest, I follow college football, but I'm one of those, like, follow the main stories kind of guy, like follow the main teams. I don't know as much of the inner workings. I get so wrapped up with the NFL, I just I don't have the time to know all these guys like you do this early in the year. So you're my go-to guy on Saturdays. And I'll tell you what, you've been good with a lot of picks this year. I'll tell you the one I like the most was Washington early in the year, especially with that USC pick you were all over. So I will give you credit for that.
And what do you do with Alabama, Joe? Always take the under.
Oh, yes, the under. Yeah. Alabama, no one scores points in those games. Alabama doesn't score a lot of points offensively, and they don't let anyone else score. Unfortunately, they don't have a game this weekend. So, I don't know. I'll just get ready for Sunday. But that's a discussion for another day. Game number two on the docket for us today. This is a big one, and it's a shame that the majority of the country probably won't be able to see this because it's on at the same time on ABC as the Texas-Oklahoma State game. USC-Oregon. USC right now currently – fifth in the BCS polls. Oregon is 10th. Wes, before we even get into the game, can you believe these Oregon Ducks this year? I mean, that opening game of the year against Boise with LeGarrette Blount, everything that went wrong, that team pretty much fell off the map. And now here we are, the end of October. This game's got Pac-10 implications written all over it. If Oregon can win this thing, it could propel them, you know, it could propel them all the way. They could end up in a major bowl game. What do you think about that?
Yeah, Oregon's as hot as any team in the country right now. They run off 6-7 straight, whatever it is. But with all due respect, there's not too many teams in the country that can travel week one to the Smurf Turf at Boise State and knock off a team there. I mean, that's a tough accomplishment to do. So don't take too much away from Oregon. I think they are a legit Pac-10 contender, and they're going to give USC all they can handle, if not more, in this one.
I've never heard that term Smurf Turf before. Is that popular? Do a lot of people say that?
That's the blue Smurf Turf, man. That's what Boise State plays on.
Oh, I know. When my brother and I played college football on PlayStation, he loves to play with Boise because he loves the turf.
Yep, Smurf Turf.
Turf doesn't help him. I usually put him down by 4 touchdowns, but regardless, he still likes playing.
That's because you're USC and he's playing with Boise State, Joe. That's what happens.
I'll roll on people with anyone. I do. I like college more than Madden because you can get the passing attacks going. I don't run the football. I don't play good defense. I throw every down. Every single down I'm throwing. So I need a team that can throw the ball. I've tried it with Penn State, the old alma mater. It doesn't work. I mean, if you've ever played college football with them, it's like picking teeth.
You're going Houston. You're going Hawaii. You're going spread 5 wide every
Give
time.
Give me Case Keenum, son. Give me Case Keenum from Houston and let me go buck wild.
Yep.
99-95 in a 5-minute quarter battle, but I digress for a minute. Let's get back to USC Oregon here. Can USC's front four slow down this run game of Oregon? Oregon has been running the ball like crazy lately. It is one of the few things I have been paying attention to in college football. What are they going to need to do, and can they do it?
Well, the thing is, this year, the USC front four is not as dominant as years past. Defensive ends Wes Horton and Everson Griffin, tackles Armstead and Casey, in particular, struggled shedding blocks last week and finding undersized Oregon State running back Jockeys Rogers. They're going to face a similar monster this week, and the Michael James is a freshman, a really talented runner inside who's undersized, can cut on a dime, consistently make guys miss, explosive up the field, and if he gets in space, he's lights out. So you're going to have to worry about what will happen if the USC Trojans struggle to stop the run game of Oregon with their front four, because if they do, things could get ugly.
Let's switch over to the USC side of the ball. Freshman quarterback Matt Barkley has been pretty good this year. He's heading to Oregon. This is an environment that has ruined so many other quarterbacks, ruined so many other teams. We saw it with Cal earlier in the year. Oregon absolutely dismantled them at home. Is Barkley going to be able to handle heading into Oregon, playing under the lights, the crowd noise? Well, the lights will come on later in the game, but the crowd noise and everything else that's going on. I mean, he's young. He got a win at Ohio State, but can he do it here?
Yeah, he's slowly improved, Joe, and we see that. And the USC coordinators, they've taken him along slowly. However, when you go into an environment like this, you're going to need to run the football, take pressure off the young quarterback, especially early in the game. We're going to see a heavy dose of Joe McKnight, Alan Bradford, keep him in manageable down and distance situations, let him work off the play action game, get outside the pocket, complete easy passes. They cannot put too much on this kid's plate early. We saw Jake Locker struggle last week against this defense down near the red zone. They've given up a ton of yards to the Oregon defense so far this year. However, they have an athletic linebacking core who tightens up near the red zone. So I think we're going to see them run the ball efficiently early and not put too much pressure on the kid, because if they do, the Oregon Ducks can create turnovers on defense.
one player in this game that's been outstanding lately and that is definitely not getting enough national coverage as he deserves is Oregon quarterback Jeremiah Masoli. Is he the toughest quarterback in the nation to slow down right now?
Joe, he might be. His option read, when he fakes the ball to James and takes off, he hides the football as well as any quarterback in the nation. He's athletic in the open field, and the guy's built like a brick. He's tough to break down. He breaks arm tackles, and the guy has consistently he's improved his passing over the last couple weeks, which has really evolved the offense as a whole. So if James gets going, if Masoli gets going, and then if they can start working off the play, action game and get the football down the field, this offense is extremely tough to stop, especially if the USC front four, like I said, cannot consistently shed blocks and stop the run early.
All right, you know what time it is. It's pick 'em time for this game as well, Wes. You took Texas over Oklahoma State earlier. Who you got in this one?
Joe, I'm going upset all the way. I like the Oregon Ducks at home. I expect them to run the ball efficiently early. You're going to see Taylor Mays. You're going to see Will Harris, the safeties, come up in the box. And then Oregon has that X factor and Ed Dixon, the tight end. The guy can make plays down the field. He's built like a bulked up wide receiver. I like Oregon in this one.
You know, I'm glad you said that, because if you were going to say USC, I was going to crush you for about the next 5 minutes on this podcast for coming on here, picking these two games to talk about, and then picking the two favorites, and then just, you know, that's the end of it. Like, there's no way I was going to let that happen.
And
so,
you know, I'm a USC homer, too. I love USC.
You are. So I like the pick. I like the pick. And you know what? I'm going to agree with you on this one because I love Oregon at home. Oregon at home, that is a tough place to play. That is in the notes you sent to me today. That is actually one thing I knew. You didn't have to include that. I also like how you use three K's to spell Matt Barkley. I'm looking at that right now. I don't know where the hell that comes from.
I'm not
from.
The sharpest knife in the drawer. You know, you got to limit me. Watch tape.
You know, sometimes just slow down with the typing. Just slow down with the typing, Wes. Just go ahead and hunt and peck every now and again. You don't need three K's in Barkley. You just need one. Everything's good at that point. As I mentioned earlier, it's the end of October. We're getting ready tomorrow to turn into the month of November. The college countdown for the last few weeks here at the NFP has focused on just game breakdowns. And, Wes, you've done a hell of a job with it, but it's time to take it up a notch. It's time to get a little bit more in-depth here at this podcast that we're trying to put together and you know, expand our horizons. And I don't even know what I'm getting at because this is a terrible lead-in, so I'm just going to get into it. We're going to talk Heisman Trophy today. There's only a few weeks left in the season. The Heisman Trophy is going to be handed out at the beginning of December. So we're not that many weeks out from announcing the award for college football's best player. And we have enough games and enough tape and enough statistics in the books at this point to start getting an accurate, you know, read on who some of these finalists are going to be. So we're going to present, and Wes, I'm going to go ahead and name this, the Wes Bunning Sweatpants Top 5 Heisman, whatever. We'll call them. I just wanted to get the word sweatpants in there because you're known for your sweatpants on Saturdays. But
do you think I could get an endorsement deal from someone?
Yeah, you know what? Who makes good ones? Like Under Armour? And, well, actually, which ones do you wear? Who makes
good ones? I think these are Russell, but, you know, they're low-level ones. So
Russell Athletic, though, that's old school. You think it'll, that's all right.
Yeah,
that's
I still got the NFP t-shirt on, though. You know I'm rocking it.
all right, so we'll call this the Wes Bunning Sweatpants Special Heisman Trophy Finalist Alert. As of right now, Wes, let's get into it. I've got your list in front of me, but I'm going to let you break them down. At number 5, who should the country be looking at as one of the Heisman finalists?
Well, you have to look at Clemson's C.J. Spiller. The guy doesn't have alarming stats anywhere. 547 yards on the ground, 267 yards through the air, but the guy's an X factor in all areas of the game for Clemson. Makes big plays on the ground, makes big plays through the air, and every time you look, he's returning a kickoff for a touchdown, he's returning a punt for a touchdown. Guy went for 310 all-purpose yards last week in Clemson's win. I like him. He needs to get more attention. This guy's going to be a playmaker in the NFL, so he's my 5th guy on the Heisman watch right now.
C.J. Spiller, running back Clemson, number 5. Coming down the list, number 4. I'm looking at it. I see another running back, Wes. Tell the people about him.
Yeah, Noel Devine, the undersized little scat back. Some people say Darren Sproles. I don't know if he's that, but the guy's going to be another playmaker at the next level. 912 yards on the ground so far this year, 10 touchdowns, 6.7 yards a carry. Every time he touches a ball, he's a threat to take it the distance. I love what he's done for West Virginia. More patient through the hole this year, not trying to turn the corner every time, showcasing the ability to run between the tackles. And if you want a pure playmaker, this guy's as good as it gets.
All right, so number five, number four, running backs. Number three, tell me you're going to switch it up a little bit. What do we got at number three?
Yeah, we're going with the Golden Domer, Jimmy Clausen at Notre Dame, the quarterback. This guy's been efficient as any quarterback in the nation so far this year. Almost led the upset victory over USC a couple weeks ago. 2,050 yards so far this season, 16 touchdowns, and I love that he's taking care of the football. Only two picks on the year. One bounced off a running back's hands right into a linebacker, so he should only be at one pick, but he's been consistently moving the Fighting Irish offense up and down the field and as good looking as any quarterback in the nation right now.
And one quick side note on Clausen, and I'm not a Notre Dame fan, but he has been playing very, very well this year. But the system he runs at Notre Dame, very conducive to the NFL level, wouldn't you say? That's going to be one thing that scouts like.
Yeah, I agree 100%. This guy's not in the five wide, spread him spread. This guy makes his own checks at the line of scrimmage, can get in and out of the huddle quickly. I really like Clausen. You put him in a West Coast scheme at the next level, I think he's going to do just fine.
They don't run that BS you see in the Big 12 where everyone lines up and then they all look to the sidelines and then 35 signs and lights and whistles go flashing up to indicate what the play is going to be. I can't stand that. Like, let the quarterbacks make some reads. Stop telling them everything to do. You know, they're 18, 19, 21 years old, 20 years old. Let's let them figure it out for themselves. Make some reads, make some plays. I hate watching that. It just seems like there's just too much. It's like playing Madden, you know?
Audibled your way out of high school, didn't you, Joe?
Believe it or not, I did. I had a damn good coaching staff that was able to drill it into my brain, and we worked on it all week, and I did audible occasionally. So I see these guys. I'd like to see them audible more, man. Let the kids play some football. Stop doing so much from the damn sidelines. I hate that. But yeah, that is one of the things I like about Clausen. That's number three. Moving on, number two, who you got?
This is the one guy no one's heard of so far this year, Joe.
And I'll admit, I'm looking at the list. I've never heard of him. Yeah, I'm getting educated right now.
This is one of the most talented running backs in the nation, a junior, Ryan Matthews from Fresno State. 1,131 yards this year, 7.3 yards a carry, 9 touchdown. He's pretty much carrying Fresno State on his back. This guy goes against 8-9 men fronts week in and week out. A thickly built guy. He's only around 5'11", but consistently is able to make people miss in between the tackles, has that explosive first step, a natural runner with the home run speed. This guy really has it all. I can see him not only, you know, coming out this coming year and being a productive every down back at the NFL, but if he keeps this kind of production up, this guy is in the hunt to win the Heisman this year.
Can he catch passes?
He can catch passes out of the backfield. The thing with Pat Hill, the coach there at Fresno State, runs another offense very conducive to the NFL, makes his running backs block and catch passes out of the backfield. I really like Matthews a lot.
If you had to, for me especially, and for anyone else listening right now, if you were able to compare him to someone in the NFL or even someone else in college football we might know a little bit more about, would you do it? Is there anyone you can compare him to?
Not offhand, Joe. You're catching me a little off guard.
That's what I'm trying to do. I'm throwing the screwball at you.
You would, really. But this guy, when I watch him, he's a natural runner with the power to break tackles. He runs hard and then has that, once he makes a man miss, that speed to separate right away. I mean, these are all the things you need when you're looking for in a running back to start at the next level. He really has the full package. He's proven he can carry the load at Fresno State, and I really like him a lot, Joe. He's, without a doubt, in my opinion, one of the top three running backs in the nation.
The Wes Bunning sweatpants sleeper for the Heisman Trophy, running back Ryan Matthews from Fresno State. All right, now look, we've gotten down to your number one option as of right now. I haven't heard the name Colt McCoy. I have not heard the name Tim Tebow. I haven't even heard the name Ricky Stanzi, and I know Bowen's not going to be happy about that. He's pushing real hard for Stanzi. Unfortunately, no one's listening. who you got at number one right now?
Joe, right now you have to look at Mark Ingram, the running back from Alabama. Yeah, he's gone for 1,004 yards, 6.6 yards per carry, 8 touchdowns. Not only in the SEC, where he's playing the best defenses week in and week out, and that's why I gave him the edge over Ryan Matthews, but also, as you said before, the Alabama offense with that anemic pass game have struggled to get the ball down the field. Ingram's forced to run against 8 men in the box every week against the best talent, the best defenses in the nation. That's why I like him, number one. He's been the best player on the best team so far, and I think he's going to carry that Alabama team not only to SEC title but to eventual national championship.
All right, ease up on all your best team talk. Florida's still number one. Florida's been winning games, too. Let's just ease up on all the Alabama number one stuff. We'll get to that at the SEC championship. Now, I'm going to throw another screwball at you. the names you mentioned, all good players, nothing against any of them. What we've seen, though, in college football the last, I don't know, it's practically every year, is that it's a race for the Heisman that's driven by big-time production generally from the quarterback position. Last year it was, what, Tebow, McCoy, Bradford. Weren't those the only three that were even invited last year,
yeah,
if memory serves me correctly? Mm-hmm. You know, the year before that, we got Tebow winning it. It seems to always be quarterbacks. You throw in some running backs here and there. Maybe every now and again a wide receiver is invited, but he pretty much never wins. I remember, it's got to be over a decade ago, when Charles Woodson beat out Peyton Manning for the Heisman Trophy. And that was pretty cool because he played both sides of the ball. Of all years, these names you've mentioned, like I said, again, great players, but of all the years, this year seems like a perfect opportunity for a lineman or a linebacker or anyone else on defense, a wide receiver, anyone around the football that isn't a quarterback or running back to win this award. If you had to give it to someone on the defensive side of the football, who right now might be in consideration for this?
I think you can look at Eric Berry, the safety from Tennessee. I think you can look at Gerald McCoy from Oklahoma. But if there's one defensive player in the nation that stands out above from a playmaking standpoint, you ready for this name, Joe?
Well, hold on. I've got one in mind. I'm hoping you're going to give it to me, but I don't think we have the right one. Go ahead.
All right.
I'm
hoping it's going to be the defensive tackle from Nebraska, Ndamukong Suh. This guy.
You got the name right.
I got it right. I mean, this guy. When you lead a team like the Nebraska Cornhuskers as a defensive tackle in tackles for loss, sacks in 1 year, you're doing something right. And he's on pace to do that in back-to-back seasons. This guy's always around the football, consistently makes plays away from his frame, behind the line of scrimmage, pressures the quarterback, double-teamed every time. Big 12 defenses scheme around this guy, and he still consistently makes plays week in and week out. If I would have to take any defensive player, it's my man, Ndamukong Suh.
Why don't you go on record right now and start publicly endorsing this kid and try to get a push going for him for the Heisman Trophy? I mean, let's get a defensive player in this year. What about the linebacker from Alabama, McClain?
Yeah,
that guy's a playmaker. What about him?
Yeah, I mean, just a man-child, too. 250 pounds, 6'3". The guy can play in a 3-4, 4-3. But like you said, we could even get the train started from our man, Mount Cody, Terrence Cody at Alabama.
Yeah.
I mean, sure, the guy doesn't have the stats, but Rolando McClain isn't the same player if he doesn't have Cody eating up four blockers on every play. You know what I mean? So
that's good. Yeah, that's good stuff. What about Navarro Bowman? Why don't you throw some Penn State guys in here? Sean Lee, get him in there.
Joe,
what about
Joe? Even you don't want any Penn State guys in there,
man,
right now. Not this year.
I went there, and after the beatdown they took to Iowa, I'm off the train. I don't even watch it. I can't. The schedule's so damn soft. It's impossible for me to get into them this year. I'm all about the SEC. I'm right on the train.
We could go with Matt Bowen Jr. and Tyler Sash at Iowa. The kid has five picks this year. I mean, he's rocking Bowen's number 9. He bicked his head already, so he's rocking the Chrome Dome.
If he's out there making plays, he's not Matt Bowen Jr.
That's
he's
true.
Just a playmaker that, you know, Bowen could aspire to be to one day.
Yeah, I think Bowen made the comparison. He's a hybrid between Matt Bowen and Ronnie Lott. So he's somewhere in between there. That's what Bell. That's quoting Bellin right now. So
talk about two opposite ends of the spectrum. Oh man, I don't even know how to compare that in some other sport. That's a joke. That's like talking about Cliff Lee's performance in the World Series. We'll do the Phillies. It's like comparing Cliff Lee to I don't know who's a bum pitcher. You know, Adam Eaton. He was with the Phillies a couple years ago. We'll go Adam Eaton.
Yeah.
How terrible he was. Well, that's the opposite end of the spectrum. Eaton is Bowen, and Cliff Lee is Ronnie Lott.
I really hope Bowen listens to this.
I'll make him.
Yeah.
I'll just tell him to fast forward to the end of the whole thing so he can hear us ripping him. But all right, so to recap, Bunning, your specials are Texas over Oklahoma State, Oregon in the upset over USC, and Mark Ingram currently as the favorite for the Heisman Trophy, running back from Alabama. Am I correct in everything I just
said? But we're going to start pimping Sue right now. We got to get this defensive lineman into the running because it's simply there's not enough, you know, with the quarterbacks not taking over. We could definitely get a defensive lineman in there somewhere.
I'm telling you, man, I told you on the phone the other day, this is the year that someone else gets in there and wins it. Get another position some love. There had to be someone in the country. start getting out there. Get his name out there. Publicly endorse him, and the six people that read what you write, they'll be on the train too.
Yeah.
So you'll have everything taken care
of. Well, on my slow Wednesdays, I think I'll write a Sue for Heisman article, because I go down to about four readers on Wednesdays.
It's still beating me with fantasy. Everyone likes to rip me apart for getting stuff wrong. You get 9 of 10 right, it doesn't matter. They're still yelling at you for the 10th one.
Yeah.
But that's a story for another day. But Bunning, as always, excellent job. We got to cut this thing off. The games are going to get ready to start in a little while. Excellent job today. Mark Ingram, start Pippen Sue. Get his name out there this week. For everyone that tuned in today, thanks for listening. Enjoy your Halloween. Enjoy the football. For Wes Bunning, I'm Joe Fortenbaugh. We will be back next Saturday. Thanks for listening to the College Countdown. We'll see you next time.